This is a Power 98.7 podcast. Now we're talking. Subscribe to Power 98.7 podcasts in iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts. There's more on power987.co.za. Who's for lunch?
It's after 2 o'clock, of course. Who's for lunch? Let me first introduce the song, right? That song was Johnny Clegg, Psyche, Hoping for a Miracle. And we've got somebody who I think there's no better person that can bring in a human experience to being under the umbrella of Legacy than the guest that we've got this afternoon. That is indeed Jesse Clegg. He joins us in the studio. Welcome, welcome, welcome to Power.
Thank you so much. It's my first time here. It's wonderful.
I know. Welcome to Power. Welcome to Power.
Yeah.
We've got so much to talk about and so many touch points that we're going into. But look, by even saying Clegg, we all know you. Everybody's going, okay, cool. We know who he is. But talk to us a little bit about Jesse, like who Jesse is and how was he raised and the family that he comes from and the like.
Well, it's a lot to summarize very quickly, but I'm a singer-songwriter. I've been in the industry for a long time, and I've sort of forged my own path, and you know, my music is different to my father's, but we were very close. We were a very close-knit family. I grew up in the music industry. Music has been a huge part of my life and a part of my upbringing. And so I was very fortunate to be able to experience many different genres of music from a very early age, travel a lot, and just see how my father not only dedicated himself to his art and his passion, but also had a sense of connection to his community and to his country, and how music can actualize that. So it was a very good training for me as a young singer-songwriter, and it gave me a grounding and a context to sort of find my own way.
How many siblings are you?
It's me and my younger brother.
And it was a very small, close-knit family.
Yeah, a very, very small, close-knit family. Yeah. And, you know, we very family-orientated. We're quite private people. And, you know, we always got the sense that the family was a special place. My father always made a special space for his family in his life. And we were very fortunate, because I think in music there's not a lot of stable relationships. And my dad was an exception, and he was just a really amazing family man.
Yeah, you know, as you're speaking about, when did you know that your father was famous? Because you're a kid, right? When you're a kid, dad is dad. He's the most uncoolest thing
yeah,
in the whole world,
nothing
right?
Less cool.
There is nothing less cool than a father, right?
Yeah.
And the more emotional, the more involved he is, the less cooler that he is, especially when you start hitting puberty.
Yeah.
But when did you know that your father was famous?
I mean, I don't know. You know, the first 6 years of my life I spent on tour, you know, so I was in hotel rooms and tour buses and airports and backstage at shows. And when you're that age, you kind of just think that that's how everyone is living. You know, you don't have any context. So I just assumed that all the kids were doing this. And I think it was really when I started school and I realized, okay, this is different. Like, my dad is away for many months. You know, when we go away together, we're traveling all the time, like we're doing shows. It's a completely different experience to my peers. So it's only when I kind of grew up a little bit and I started to have a comparison, maybe 6 or 7, that I realized that, you know, we were in a very different environment. But it was a wonderful environment. And, you know, there's nothing better to give to your kids than art and travel, you know, especially from a young age. I think it was very enriching for both of us. And so I'm grateful.
It's very true that it is a different experience. And I think it will touch on a lot about how, because parents work so hard to achieve certain successes for the purpose of their children and for the advancement and the betterment of their children. What happens in that pursuit is that you lose the parenting side. So though you may grow up traveling, though you may grow up seeing the world that was not available to a lot of kids, but your father was not there for a long time, right?
Yeah.
There are periodic moments where dad was not there. And
sure.
Do we ever speak enough about how in the pursuit of success, for the purpose of advancing the lives of our children, the very same thing that we miss out on is raising our kids? How was that?
Yeah, I mean, that's something that I think about now as a father. I think, you know, he was always very honest and vulnerable with us. You know, there was never the sense that we couldn't talk or that he was larger than life or anything. He would always be very real with us and say, you know, I have to go. I don't want to go, and I'm going to miss you, and I'm going to try and get you guys out there as much as we can, but there are going to be times where I'm not going to be there, and this is the life that I've chosen, you know. And I think it's very important for kids to see their parents struggling and also chasing their dream. You know, you would never want to compromise your own passion for your kids, because then you're not the best version of yourself. You know, you want your kids to see a shining example of someone being passionate and having discipline and being committed. So, you know, as hard as that was, it also gave me a sense of, as a musician, there's a lot of sacrifice, a lot of discipline, and it's not all just glamour. You know, there's a lot of work to be done, and there's hard times. And I think that's important for a child to see. You know, you have to see the ups and the downs, and you have to experience it for yourself. So as a father, you know, I've got a very young baby, and I think about that all the time. But I always remember how amazing it was when we were together and how special it was, and his presence with us, you know. So I think it's not only about quantity, it's about quality time, you know, being totally present. And he definitely gave that to us.
Well, you can tell by this conversation, we're going to go much deeper. Jesse Clegg is in the house.
Digging deep.
We dig deep in this show, Jesse.
This is like a therapy session.
Do you know how many people have come into my studio every Thursday and walk out and say, I feel like I just had therapy? So don't worry. If you've got a question and or a comment for him, 0861987000083303703.
Tweet Faith. At Faith Mangope and hashtag Power Lunch.
Indeed, that is a hashtag. We're still in conversation with a songwriter, guitarist, pianist, musician, just the whole encompassing musician, producer, and son of a legendary Maskandi musician, Johnny Clegg. Jesse Clegg is joining us in the studio. We're going deeper into this conversation right now. And if you've got a question or comment for him, 0861987000 or 0833003703. So you grew up in apartheid South Africa, right? Your father at the time is known as a white Zulu. Already that in itself puts you at a very precarious position, I can imagine, at family gatherings and even the greater South African construct. Were you too young to recognize the type of choices he was making and the potential implications of making music at the time with a black man, which is not popular, you know, or learning isiZulu and speaking isiZulu and relating to a marginalized majority when it was not popular to do, or even illegal to do so, because he chose a different path?
Well, I think, I mean, I was 5 years old when you know, 94 happened, and we transitioned into democracy. So I was very young for that period where, you know, I was around and my dad was going through the things that he was going through. So, you know, I have snatches of memories. You know, I think, again, like when you're young, it's hard to compare your experience with others. So you don't really know what's unusual. But, you know, we spent a lot of time with Sipho in KZN, in his homestead. I had a lot of exposure to African culture, not only artistically, but also, you know, just spending time with Sipho and his family. My dad had a very close friend, Dudu, who was a dancer in Savuka, and he was like an uncle to me. And he was assassinated in 92 in the political violence, and I remember that he was absent after, like, I didn't understand why, but he wasn't around anymore. And there were moments like that, you know, like things that just punctuate your reality and you just see, oh, this is a strange situation. I don't understand what's going on. But I think I'm very grateful, and I was lucky that I got such a broad spectrum of culture in South Africa. You know, I really got to see how many different cultures live and interact, and you can, and the family dynamic and the social etiquette. And, you know, I went to so many weddings and funerals in Zululand, and I got to see the power of ritual and the power of tradition, and that really was it's so humanizing, you know. You kind of get to see each other in such a beautiful, vulnerable way, and I've taken that into my adult life, and I think that it was something that we did all the way through my childhood. And me and my brother and my mom, we all, you know, Sipho and his family are like family to us. You know, we are, you know, that is like extended family. And so it, you know, it wasn't unusual to us. It was totally normal. It was completely comfortable and magical. But there were moments where I could see that there was some tension happening, or, you know, someone would just not be around anymore. And, you know, I wouldn't understand because I was like 3 years old. And it's only afterwards, processing and looking back at it, to really appreciate how lucky I was that my experience of South Africa was not segregated. I was completely immersed.
Yeah. And not being segregated as well, it teaches something about learning to understand, appreciate, and work within a dynamic South Africa. You know, it's interesting speaking to somebody on the other side. When you're seeing, for example, right now the popular thing is Belinda Margo, and I don't even want to give her the benefit of too much publicity, but this is what we're dealing with, sporadic instances of racism and racial expression, when we should be a country that is moving forward towards building post. But it says a lot about the inculcation and perhaps the psychological damage that apartheid did, not only to black people, but to white people too.
Yeah, and it's true on both sides. I think that, you know, racism is the root is ignorance. You know, it's not being having the opportunity to actually experience the humanity of that other person. You know, if you actually have a personal connection to someone in whatever race, you know, that you have an issue with, if you have a friendship or you have a family connection, or you get a chance to see their truth and their vulnerabilities and their family and their hopes and dreams, you know, it's impossible to have that view, because they suddenly become who you are, which is also a vulnerable person with hopes and dreams, you know. So again, like for me, I didn't experience the, like, my side or your side, like that just didn't exist in our family or in our context. But, you know, growing up, you become aware of it. But I'm glad that, you know, my foundation is, you know, it was completely mixed and completely diverse, and it was just such a culturally enriching childhood to have.
When you look at the shadow, your dad was he still is, right? A huge personality, massive personality, highly respected individual who was so gifted. But I think what took him and allowed him to transcend, and I use the examples, for example, of PJ Powers, is how Black people did not feel as though they were being it was not caricature, it was not from a place of inauthenticity. There was authenticity within which the music was expressed, right? But in that, they're kids, and the kids have to find their own voices, and the kids have to find their own path and their own purposes. How do you find your own voice in Jesse? So that you're not, and again, I refer to it as that when you came in, so that you're not just Jesse John's child. How do you find that voice?
Look, I think every artist has their own challenge. You know, in my dad's case, he was making music that was illegal. So that was challenging. And, you know, I've got my challenge, which is to define my own sound. And I think, you know, I've been around for a while now, and I've got my own fan base. And I think that the key to my success in this career has just been that I haven't done anything. My music is just completely different to his. I'm appealing to a very different fan base. You know, I'm a singer-songwriter. I make, you know, electro kind of pop music. I've collaborated with loads of DJs. You know, I do my own thing. And, you know, that was really an important lesson from my dad to me, was that, you know, he did what he wanted to do. He loved this music. He didn't understand why he loved it. It saved his life. And he made that music, even though, you know, there was obvious reasons not to. And it's just a lesson in trusting your creative source, trusting your sort of aesthetic, you know, instinct to make the art and make the music that is true to you. And, you know, you're never going to do anything more unique than what is uniquely you. And I think for me, that has been a really helpful tool, you know, because if you're trying to, like, hear Afro pop music, you must listen to my dad. You're not going to hear that in my music. But if you want to hear what I'm doing, you know, that's a whole nother universe of expression and songwriting and influences and stuff. And I'm a huge fan of my dad's music. I mean, it's in my bones. But I have my own world that I'm exploring.
And again, it becomes so pertinent what you're saying, because it's about finding yourself and finding your voice and finding your purpose and carving out and being deliberately intentional about carving out your space, especially when your parents resonate so much with a greater, broader spectrum. And I never think we talk to kids who have to grow up within under a shadow of someone. And that person is not a sibling. It's actually a parent. You know? And how do you locate your space in that? But you also studied law.
I did, yeah.
All right, so you are really locating a very different path to where
you are.
I did a
BA law degree, and then I did a honors degree in literature. I really enjoyed academia. You know, I was at WITS for a long time. My dad actually lectured at WITS, so we both had, you know, there's lots of academia in our family. My parents met at WITS, so we're old school WITSies.
Trust me, you got the edge. I was at WITS.
Yeah.
I feel like everybody that went to WITS needs a little bit of a therapy session. Because, wow,
I enjoyed it.
You did?
Yeah, man. I don't know. It was a very expansive time for me. Yeah. You know, I was just starting in the music industry. I was reading, you know, I loved philosophy and politics and literature, and the law side for me was fascinating, from like the human rights law and constitutional law and, like, you know, the foundations of this country. Like, you know, law has such a role to play in how community and society sees itself and projects into the future. Mm. You know, one of the things that South Africa has is such an incredible constitution and the legal framework that, you know, the forefathers of our very young country put together. There was so much, you know, it's such a rich document, and it's fascinating to study it from a legal perspective. And so it was just an expansive time for me. You know, I was reading new books, I was being exposed to new ideas. I had all the mythology of Wits, you know, floating through my family. So it was nice to do that. And I was, you know, still touring and recording and doing my albums and stuff at the same time. So I would often be on tour buses with legal textbooks reading in the back.
But it shows the dynamism of the human being that you are. And it's so funny. And I struggle with this one, Jesse. I thought that the generation that came after our parents was supposed to be different.
Mm.
From a perspective, you know, from a racial divide perspective, I thought we were going to be inclusive.
Mm.
But when you start reading what happened in Stellenbosch with the kid that urinated on a black boy's desk in his dormitory, and you start hearing stories like this, this is not coming from the older generation. You see, I can not accept, but I can hear a 70-year-old who's racist. There I get it, because you were fundamentally brought up to believe that there's a non-whites are better than you in every way and form. It was indoctrination, and that we can appreciate it. I don't understand it from young people.
Mm. Well, yeah, and I think, you know, I've met white people who hate black people, and I've also met black people who hate white people. You know, there is a mistrust, and I mean, it's obvious, you know, because of our history. I mean, we have a very difficult history, and the thing that's sad is that, you know, it starts with education, but it also starts with leadership. You know, I think that we've got a problem where the leadership is trying to manifest those divisions to create, you know, political power, to create outrage. And it's not unique to South Africa. I mean, if you look at America, if you look at parts of Europe, you know, we're in a very strange moment politically, and we're starting to mistrust each other, and we're seeing, you know, we're starting to emphasize our differences as opposed to our commonality. And that's a really sad thing. I think that a lot of those incidences that we hear about are devastating, and they're really traumatic. But, you know, if I think about my experience in South Africa, you know, I get to meet lots of different people, and we still are such a loving country face to face. You know, I know there are terrible moments that happen, but I really do get the impression that, like, we have so much potential. You know, we can unlock this thing. And it's going to be difficult, and it's going to take time, but the potential is there. I'm really hopeful, and I think that it's possible. And, you know, that was, my dad believed that as well. You know, he believed in this place. He believed that we would find our way together, and it's the only way we can do it. We can only do it together. So we have to work through it.
Yeah, but then your dad was willing to be open to injustice and call it out what it is. When it was injustice, it was injustice. I don't know. I feel like this generation becomes apologetic about even the existence of injustice.
Mm. Yeah, I mean, I don't think there's an easy fix. I think that it's going to take time. I think that, you know, it's not that long ago that we were in a very different place in this country. It's not long enough ago for us to really move on. And these are growing pains. You know, we are a very young country, and we have to be patient with each other, and we have to try and give each other the benefit of the doubt. But what doesn't help is if there is a political incentive to agitate those differences and to create mistrust among one another. You know, I really think, like, you know, Mandela was an amazing symbolic example for how forgiveness works and how coming together works and how a new future could be forged. You know, regardless of what he was as a politician, like, he was a symbol. And, you know, those symbols are important for young countries, very important. And You know, I think that we need more of that kind of visionary leadership to help us through this. You know, we need to be able to see it ourselves. So I'm hopeful, and I hope I can be part of the solution in some small way.
If you, because, you know, it's what you've gone through is public loss on all fronts, right? Whether through father or through a partner, you've gone through loss. You understand loss. And
yes,
there are many people, and I always say this, that this year, from what I'm understanding, is that a lot of people have lost. And they don't know how to navigate loss. How do you not stay, or how have you gone through the process of grief that allows you to see some kind of light? Do you see some kind of light, you know?
Yeah.
You hear, so I'm guessing that you woke up this morning, thank
yeah.
God. But you've gone through pain, and you've gone through loss. And I think that nobody should be able to go through loss like you've gone through, just back to back.
Yeah, well, thank you. You know, it's I think for me, I'm still processing it. You know, grief is a journey. And I am trying to be kind to myself and trying to do things that I enjoy, like music. You know, that is my passion, and that is my therapy, you know. And my child, you know, my little girl, she's 18 months.
Jeez.
And she's, it's amazing what young kids can do in terms of just your focus and your motivation and, you know, your feeling of like, I've got a job to do. You know, I can't fall apart. I'm here to do my job, and I'm here to look after my baby, and I need to be the best version of myself for her. And that's what I was saying about my dad as well. You know, the sacrifices you make, you know, you may not always be present, but your child understands why you're not present, and that there's a sacrifice that has to happen in order for them to live their best life. So I'm still working it through. You know, it's a daily thing. And I'm very grateful to have my amazing family with me, supporting me, my mom and my in-laws and my brother. And you know, I'm just here to be the best parent I can be at this point. That's really my focus.
What makes you get up in the morning? Because I can imagine there are times, and again, you're the best person I can locate where it comes to being able to empathize with people at that level. Because I can imagine when you've gone through grief and you're saying that I want to be a great father to your 18-month, but what makes you get up in the morning?
I mean, you know, I'm a very hopeful person. You know, I think just instinctively, and you know, I'm not someone who gets like paralyzed with depression or grief. That's just not in my makeup. You know, for me, I want to get out of bed and I want to solve the problems and I want to get a handle on it. You know, like for me, being proactive and trying to like get my arms around the emotions and the feelings, and you know, get through what we're going through, as opposed to like be a victim of it, or to be subjective to it. Like for me, when I go through these moments, it's just my personal makeup. I just get proactive, and it you know, I think that I don't like to let myself fall into like a dark place. You know, I think that emotion is not constructive. And even though it's important to feel sad, it's important to not deny yourself those emotions. It's not the full picture. You know, it's a chapter. Yeah,
it's a
chapter.
The book.
And it's one aspect, and there's lots to be grateful for, and there's lots to be excited about, you know. I'm releasing new music. I'm going on tour in December. I've got a beautiful little girl. I've got a wonderful family. You know, I'm grateful. And I've gone through tragedy, and that's okay. You know, lots of people have gone through it. I think the last 2 years, you know, have been tragic for a lot of people. And so I feel connected to those people through suffering. And that is a beautiful thing about suffering. It can connect us, you know.
Yeah, that is very true. Suffering can connect. And as I'm saying, that you're the best person to locate that. So you're now now you're going on tour, which we can't, and now because we don't wear masks, so we get to experience something.
We can finally do it.
We don't expect. What can we expect for this tour?
Yeah, so I'm heading out on a big tour in December. I'm going to be playing some new songs, and this is an annual event. Well, it was an annual event before COVID, but now this is our first big one back. I'm going to be touring across the country from the middle of December to the middle of January. Got lots of new songs. We're playing in clubs, theaters, festivals, some very intimate acoustic shows, and it's basically just this epic adventure of sort of connecting through music. We're in a different city every day.
Sure.
So I think there's like 18 or 20 shows in the next couple weeks.
18 and to 20 shows in the next couple weeks?
Yeah. So we start like mid-December and we finish mid-Jan. So we're playing almost every night. So it's going to be epic. And we've got a beautiful new tour bus from Toyota. So thanks. Shout out to you guys. And yeah, all my dates are on jessiclegg.com. And yeah, I hope I get to, you know, party with everyone along the coast.
You know, I actually get to ask a man this. This gives me such great joy. Hear me out a second. How do you balance it all? Because women get asked this question. No, you guys laugh, but women get asked this question. Men don't ever get asked, you are this, you are this, you are this. How do you balance it all? So I get to ask you now.
Okay.
You are a musician. You are this, you're this. You're a dad. Mm. A dad to an 18-month-old girl, right? Mm. How do you balance it all?
I have a lot of help. I have my family. I have my friends. I have my management. You know, I have my priorities. Like, my priorities are clear. I know what I need to do. And, you know, it can be overwhelming at times. But I had a very good role model in my father, you know, and he was balancing a lot. So I don't know. It just happens. It just works. And I've got my family, and that makes a big difference. You know, I would not be able to do it alone. That's for sure.
If you have to look at your dad right now, and I mean, it's different when you come on the other side, right? You wish you can call him and ask him for stuff, and you can't. But when your dad, and I always believe that people look down at us, you know, when your dad looks at you today, in 2 minutes to the top of the hour, how do you think he would feel? What do you think he'd say to you?
Jeez, I don't know. I mean, I hope he would be proud of me. I hope he would be excited that he's got a granddaughter.
Did he not meet his grandchild?
No, he didn't, unfortunately. Oh. He passed just before. And, you know, I feel him with me. I feel his presence with me. And he was an incredibly strong person. He went through a lot of loss in his life. He had a very difficult childhood. And he lost friends during apartheid, very close friends. And I watched him go through all that. And there was something profoundly... he just had this deep strength. And I'm grateful that I feel like he passed that on to me. You know, he had this sense that the universe works in its own way, and you have to have faith in the universe. You have to trust the future. You know, it's gonna work out. And I have that as well. So I'm grateful to that, and I hope he sees that.
I definitely think that your father is very proud of you. And
thank
more
you.
Than anything else, being able to draw on some strength. Jesse, what a pleasure it is. I told you it's a bit of a different different conversation, huh?
Yeah. So yeah? When are we going on air?
Well, this is done all
this is a private therapy session. So now tell me when we're going to start recording.
No, this is exactly how every conversation goes on this show, Shane. But nonetheless, though, it speaks truth to... I think we've so passed the times of us having inauthentic and shallow conversations.
Mm.
People need to know that people are human.
Yeah, for sure.
And that our pain and our joy can give us another reason to live another day.
For sure, man. Thank you. I agree. And I appreciate the conversation. And the one thing we didn't mention is that there's a new song of my father's called Hoping for a Miracle, featuring Imsaki, which I produced.
And, which we played.
Which you just played.
Yeah.
And I'm very proud of it. And it's just come out. It's the first new Johnny Clegg release, which is something that I'm very excited to be able to share with people.
Oh, man. Much appreciated. Johnny Clegg, Jesse Clegg. The Cleggs are in the house.
The Cleggs
are in the house. This is where we leave it for this edition of Power Lunch.
You've been listening to a Power 98.7 podcast. For more podcasts, visit power987.co.za or subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.